From Relevant Magazine and RelevantMagazine.com, it's the Relevant Podcast.
It's the week of June 17th, 2011, and this is the Relevant Podcast. That kind of worked. I didn't say the word Friday.
I'm so nervous.
I do not know what day it is.
I think we just entered into like a wormhole in the universe.
I feel a little off kilter. In case you weren't sure, June 17th is a Friday. Okay. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and here with me in our Orlando studios is Maya Strang.
Hi. Was that loud?
Yeah. Josh Louis and Loveless.
Hey, people.
On the Skype line from Loverland, Virginia, Jesse Carey.
What's up? That's because I got swag.
And our he's been watching that Krayshawn video over and over.
Just on repeat, yeah. No, I watched the Richard Roberts video that...
I found that.
Chat post. Oh, was that you that found
it? Yeah,
I said when you watched it, did you feel the electricity in the air?
I haven't seen it. What about the rest of us that haven't?
The Dare to Be Daniel. It's on the podcast episode page. Oh, okay, I found a video that somebody shot on their camera phone or
God
something in the crowd during a Christmas concert at ORU, and he busts out Dare to Be a Daniel. And it's like, it wasn't... Jesse, it wasn't funny. It was actually painful. Like, it was tough to watch, man.
Well, no, that wasn't the one that I was referring to.
No, I know, but I'm just saying the whole song
everything.
Experience was painful.
I would imagine
no,
everything.
What I'm saying, when you're there, I wish that person had panned around to see how packed it was. And literally, people are running up and down the aisles giving high fives.
But like,
I mean, it's unlike any experience you've ever had.
I felt so bad because even the student choir that was behind them was kind of giggling and smirking during it. And it's like, the man is being mocked behind, like on stage.
Okay, but okay,
he doesn't realize
here's the thing.
No.
I've decided to no longer like things ironically. I'm only going to like them for real. Uh-huh. So like when I hear Friday or some funny YouTube song, I only like it for real. You know, and that's the same with that, because it's eliciting such a reaction that it doesn't matter if it's bad or good. I like it, you know.
What triggered this change in behavior?
Realness?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd been coming to grips with why I think certain things are funny.
Wait, are you going to counseling right now?
No. I was thinking about why certain things are weirdly funny to me. And I was like, well, maybe it's because I think they're funny because it's like ironic or it's weird. But I wouldn't say I truly like those things. But then I'm like, what am I talking about? I love those things.
Have you read the Klosterman piece on guilty pleasures?
Yes,
he advocates heavily for the fact that there should be no guilty pleasures. If you like something, you like it.
And I think it extends to like irony. Like if I wore, like let's say I wanted to grow a mustache, I wouldn't like it because I thought it was like kind of funny. I would just like it, you know?
And it would be kind of funny. But
it
you
would
like
be,
but you
but
like
I,
things
but I like it.
You okay. like things that are kind of funny.
So you're saying that I based on that assumption, I really like The Real Housewives of Orange County.
Exactly. You don't like it ironically. If you like it, you actually like it.
I need to think about this deeply because now I hate myself.
It really bugs me because I watch those marathons late at night.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's fantastic. Are you kidding me?
Well, okay.
So, Reunion part 1 and 2 of Orange County.
Oh my gosh.
I'm gonna fly solo on this.
No.
I'm prepared
I saw
to fly
it.
Solo on this.
I saw it.
Don't give me any other television besides that.
It is such a statement on the condition of America. It honestly, meta, it is such a microcosm of everything that's wrong with society. Yeah. And I mean, as a Christian, honestly, yeah. I watch it just flabbergasted going, this is what the flesh, that like where that road leads. You know what I mean? This it is so empty and they are so... It's like a car wreck on the side of the road, and I watch it fascinated, and I'm like, how did that car wreck happen? And I want to learn from it and not have a similar wreck.
It's the new.
You watch all of them
because I need context, Maya.
Of them from all over the states. You need to know.
I'm specific to Atlanta and Orange County. I draw the line.
I'm a New Jersey
I've watched
guy.
A yeah. Jersey one before,
yeah,
and
see?
I saw them get in a cat fight, and I rewound it like five times because I didn't understand why they got in the fight.
Well, that Teresa
it was never clear.
Character, she just likes throwing tables for no reason.
It's the it's the new Jerry Springer, right? It's the new daytime talk show. It's the new soap opera. It's like a hybrid between the soap opera and I think the daytime.
What I don't understand about Bravo is why they overlap these. They're ultra short seasons. It's like six episodes as a season, but they overlap them. They will have current new Jersey ones happening and Orange County ones happening. And I don't understand that. It's like, we need to get in our space. We need to be in the Orange County season.
Yeah. They don't understand sports seasons, right?
Right.
That you have like some separation between the playoffs.
You have to.
Yeah. Like there's NFL or NHL playoffs going on during the NBA playoffs, but who pays attention to the NHL?
Yeah, that's fine. Right. We still have context. Right. We're just watching NBA. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. We have a great podcast coming up for you. Today we have a spotlight and interview with Owl City. Adam Young, who's Owl City, his new album came out this past week. Highly anticipated. And we also have an interview with Leslie Leland, who's an author and has a new book out called The Spirit of Food, which I didn't know food had spirits.
Mm-hmm. Soul.
It has a soul. That's I don't want to eat it.
Certain kinds of food has soul.
Interesting.
Soul food.
Is that why you're vegetarian?
Yeah.
Well,
because it has a soul.
Yes.
And because of your wife.
Because you read this book. You ghost wrote Leslie Leland's
new
book.
I did.
All right. Yeah. So stay tuned for that. Up first, your entertainment releases. New music we have coming out on Tuesday, June 21st. Bon Iver with Bon Iver.
This is probably one of the most talked about albums I mean,
a long time.
You've heard it. I mean, NPR has been streaming it. It's fantastic.
It's great.
Everybody is talking about this.
Yeah, it's great. Gomez with Whatever's on Your Mind. I had some Gomez albums in the late 90s.
Selena Gomez.
She wasn't born.
She wasn't born in the late 90s. Yeah. The Chain Gang of 1974 with Wayward Fire. Yacht with Shangri-La. And last but not least, Peter Furler with On Fire.
Former Newsboys lead singer, or drummer and lead singer.
What do you think would happen if you got Michael Tate and Peter Furler in the same room to talk Newsboys? I mean, is that, I mean, that seems like a feature and relevant.
I would put them in a spinning drum cage. The drummer used to play in a spinning drum cage?
It was the old Motley Crue spinning drum cage, I think.
It defined my teenage years going to Christian concerts. Newsboys was famous, for the drummer was on this thing, and at like the apex of the concert, three quarters of the way through, there was a song where it was actually on this massive robotic arm, and the drummer would then be lifted out and hover over the audience, and he would be spinning and drumming, and everybody's like, it was the most amazing thing you've ever seen.
Was it?
And they obviously bought that equipment because they used it for about 10 years.
They did.
Yeah, and then it broke in a horrific accident.
It did not.
Like Spider-Man the musical. Yeah. Drummers are falling from the ceiling. Yeah. Peter Furler is actually a worship leader on staff at Calvary Assembly here in Orlando.
I know.
That was shocking to me.
That's still amazing.
Does he play drums and sing during worship like a Phil Collins concert?
He spins around in the ceiling.
I've never seen it. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not making fun. I think singing drummers, I actually like them. I don't ironically like singing. So I would like to see that.
Your brother's a singing drummer.
Yes, he is.
Does he have a mic on a stand, or does he have like the Madonna head stage mic?
Which one is more legit? Like in your opinion,
for a drummer,
I think
a mic on a stand.
Yeah. Be a boom mic.
You got to lean over. Yeah,
like good call.
Really get into it. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
You really got to be howling out there.
I assume the guy in the cage had it on his face if he was twirling.
He wasn't.
Or
singing.
I think the cage.
Oh, he
was
wasn't singing.
From the microphones.
Oh.
Peter Furler didn't sing from the drums.
I don't.
Most
think so.
Of the no, it was. Yeah, I mean, he like went and did a couple songs like that. I feel like, to mix things up like Coldplay does. Yeah. But the drummer's the drummer.
Hey, I do think it's distracting when in church a worship leader tries to lead from the drum set.
I've never seen that. I've seen it.
And it is. I don't care if you're a great drummer, you're a great vocalist, you're a great worship leader. When you combine those, it's like combining your three great foods. Doesn't mean they're going to go well together. So
like a hot dog, a brownie.
This is a PSA to the church world. Any of you who see someone doing that, you need to confront them. There's truth that needs to be told. I don't know. It's a mistake a lot of people.
Well, is this an epidemic?
You know what the issue is with it? It's because the first quarter of the song, everyone in the audience is looking around at who's singing.
Right.
You know, they don't put the pieces together about a quarter way through their song. They're like, oh, it's the drummer singing.
Yeah.
And then they try to think about, well, could I play drums and sing? It gets your mind all messed up.
Yeah.
It breaks the spirit, as they say.
So the answer is just no. Yeah. The answer is no.
Okay.
Movie release is coming out on Friday, June 24th. We have Cars 2, starring Owen Wilson and Larry the Cable Guy, and Bad Teacher, starring Cameron Diaz and Justin Timberlake and Jason Segel.
That actually looks funny.
That's the only argument I need, Sean.
It's good. It's a great trailer.
I haven't seen that commercial
since the finals have ended, because no one would possibly make the argument that he's Jordan now.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, after...
I think I'm being legit here. He's 0-2 in the finals.
Yeah, right now, Lamar Odom looks better than LeBron James.
Oh.
So,
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I'm just telling you.
Is that because he's married to a Kardashian?
And because of the rings.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because of the championship rings.
Okay, that'll do it for your entertainment releases. Stay tuned. Up next, Slices. And the Bible in his hand. Shake a light, drown the sun, close the shades, lock the door, burn the pages of your life as your body hits the floor. And as you weep, you can hear there's an echo of a call. And through the violent, bloody night, Nehemiah builds the wall.
Need to raise money for your upcoming mission trip? Well, Razoo can help. Check out Razoo's ad in this month's issue of Relevant Magazine, or go to razoo.com to learn more. That's razoo.com. I said, crooked is the man who reveals in a verse they were prophet of the land.
When there's poison in your mind, shake the light, down the song. You're listening to Burlap to Cashmere. Really?
Blast from the past, they're coming back.
I
want to throw it out there and see what the podcast listeners think.
The song is Nehemiah, Build a Wall. At the beginning of the podcast, you heard Sia with the song You've Changed. It's playing right now on Relevant TV. Okay, it's time for Slices. What do you have, Jesse?
All right, well, the record label lobby is continuing their campaign of goodwill and customer appreciation. Now by pressuring legislators to pass a law, the Senate to pass a law, that would make it illegal to upload lip-synced videos to YouTube. So that means if you're doing one of the funny videos where you're, lip-syncing the single ladies, I have a whole library of those that I've done, you could face a maximum. They've upped it. It's not just getting sued now. You could face a maximum of 5 years in prison.
That's ridiculous.
So I think there are Justin Bieber fans out there that are looking at a possible life prison sentences for the volume of YouTube videos that they lip synced. So instead of focusing on pressing issues in this country, any sort of reforms to laws or the war on drugs or poverty, the Senate has decided to dedicate its resources to people lip-singing songs on YouTube.
Kind of faded out there at the end, huh? Kind of petered
out.
Yeah,
I was trying to insert a joke, but it didn't materialize. I'll be honest. I was trying to think of a really funny song, but it just didn't happen. I don't know what happened.
Sometimes
it doesn't work. What's confusing about that?
You're kind of like the LeBron James of Slices telling.
I'll give you those first three quarters.
Kind of collapse at the end.
Yeah, close the deal.
Yeah, collapse right at the end.
What's confusing about the whole situation is the record industry is not going to recoup that money. You know, it's one thing if you go after somebody and they're using it for film or TV and they've got a budget. And, you know, these people online that lip sync to Beyonce are helping promote, even if it's funny and stupid, it's helping to promote the song.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not cutting into the profits. It's not like, you know what, I'm not going to go buy that Eminem album because I got this video of a 12-year-old lip singing it in his bedroom. I'm just going to listen to that on repeat instead. But it seems like, why is the record industry go after their customers repeatedly? Do they literally have no other business plan than this?
I
don't think so.
Well, record sales are down.
Record sales are down, but digital sales are up.
Yeah, it's like, well, but their logic is record sales are down. I know what the best thing to do. Incarcerate our customers.
Well, they can still buy stuff online. In prison. Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think prisoners are at Amazon.com like having boxes delivered. Yeah.
In the commissary.
In the commissary.
They can get a little iPod.
Order a little kitchen knife set, have it delivered. No, I don't think.
Just music.
Just cakes with files in them.
I'm pretty sure they still do that.
Not digital files. I'm talking about files to break out.
There should be like a website, cakeandfile.com. That would be for prisoners. Actually,
you should buy that.
Cake and File. Let me check it out real quick. Hold on.
That would be a cool name for a bakery, too.
Ooh, Maya.
Yeah, there you go.
Cake and File.
Put a file in
cake
it.
And file. Kind cake. Of like rank and file.
Yeah.
And then the logo would be a cake with like a file hanging out of each side.
Yeah. And you make all everyone that works in the bakery wear the old school prison stripes.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
As if they've just broken out and come here to work.
That'd be amazing. And they all have like icing on their fingertips.
And like instead of plates, they're served on like license plates that were, you know, they made in prison.
Maya, we have
instead of like frosting bags, it's their guns that you do the frosting to frost the cakes.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, like water guns.
Like water guns instead of frosting. Yeah.
Are you kidding? This is amazing.
Oh, dear.
Let's do
cake
it.
Cake and File. It would be so great.
So great. So apparently the government is trying to cut back on their expenses and get their budget back. And so President Obama has put Joe Biden.
Sorry to interject. My favorite Onion headline of last year was Joe Biden receives lifetime banishment from Dave and Buster's. What? It had a long, detailed story of all the offenses he's racked up at Dave and Buster's.
Speaking of Dave and Buster's. They are opening the world's largest Dave and Buster's here next month.
It's world's largest?
World's largest. It was on the news report. And it's on iDrive. It's three stories.
Oh, my goodness.
It's over 90,000 square feet. And I bought four tickets to the VIP pre-opening last night.
Why?
You bought?
Yeah. It was a charity donation to the Big Brother Big Sisters of Central Florida.
By the way, Maya, you made a donation last night that you were unaware of.
Okay. I did this at 1 a.m. Yeah. And Chris and I are going because it's free. They like you show up. This pre-event thing is free food, free
minus
games. Yeah, right. But it's going to a good cause.
That's a $500 donation.
No. $25. That's it. Okay. Each.
Wow.
Well, that's the same price as Britney Spears tickets in Orlando after today's Groupon.
Are you serious?
I'm kidding.
If you could give me the chance to Groupon a Britney Spears ticket or get VIP Dave and Buster's, hands down, I'll go with Dave and Buster's.
They literally, the tickets aren't selling for the Britney Spears show. And so they
Groupon today.
Half price off Britney Spears tickets in Orlando.
Goodness.
Yep.
Jesse, I bought two. Me and you. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. If we go like dressed up.
Of course, naturally.
Like a big night out on the town. And then we cap it off with some David
Buster's.
Little foosball.
Dude, like tux with like the tails and like top hats. Like you guys like do it up.
It'd be amazing.
Can you imagine showing up at the Britney Spears concert in like coattails?
We could do a podcast live from the Britney Spears concert.
We rent
concert.
A limo.
It's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea.
Absolutely rent a limo.
Okay, so anyways, as I was saying...
We're wearing corsages.
Okay, so President Barack Obama... Any more, Jesse?
No, I'm just laughing.
I could just. I felt like you were going to head one more in you.
No, I'm sorry.
So President Barack Obama has put Joe Biden in charge to help identify and eliminate wasteful federal spending, which is like, okay, that's great. Well... the first thing on Joe Biden's, he sent out a message to the White House entitled, "There's a new sheriff in town." And it says, "And I bet you didn't know that your tax dollars pay for a website dedicated to the desert tortoise. And I'm sure it's a wonderful species, but we can't afford to have a standalone site devoted to every member of the animal kingdom." So he's going after these itty bitty websites that are government run. Apparently there's 2,000 federal government domains.
I hope he doesn't discover that Relevant is actually being funded.
And he's going after them. And there's another website they're going after. Well, apparently as of this week, it is dead. It's a dead link. But it was a federal domain devoted to foresters who play the fiddle. It was called fiddlinforesters.gov.
Wait, that was available?
Now it is.
This sounds like
so this is what our this is what you do when you're vice president of the United States.
Well, you got a lot of time on your hands.
I think everyone's a little confused about the vice president's role, but now we just know he's sitting in front of GoDaddy typing in domains. Fiddler Foresters is a .gov. There's a new sheriff in town now.
It's brilliant.
It doesn't say like how much it costs the government per website. I mean, we know websites.
A year.
It wouldn't be that much, unless they've got a whole staff. But just so you know, if you own a .gov.
You kind of petered out at the end like Jesse and
LeBron.
You guys
aren't giving any feedback today. So I think you guys are petering out on me.
I think it's true.
So you're saying that LeBron's teammates let him down.
Right. That you guys let me down. I didn't let you down.
I was passing the ball is what I was doing.
I was putting an assist up there.
You're all looking at your phone.
I can't help that I'm Juwan Howard.
Every single one of you. Yeah.
You're freaking LeBron James. You finish your slice.
What I did was I tossed an alley-oop up for my teammate, and you made me look like I shot an air ball.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. You're LeBron James of this slice. You need to just take it to the hole and slam it.
You were part of the Fab Five. You should still be Fab Five, even though it was 20 years ago.
That was 37 years ago.
Yeah. He's one of those guys that I cannot believe is still like a relevant. It's like in baseball when I see Chipper Jones. It's like Chipper Jones has been a star baseball player since I've been like 6 years old.
Well,
your turn, Josh. You could win.
I'm not going to because Jesse stole my slice. First of all,
no.
Second of all,
so he's a ball hog.
I don't. Yeah, he is.
He's the LeBron James of slices.
Yeah. Yes, it's been confirmed.
Yeah.
And when you take your talents to South Beach, you take the ball first.
I don't know if you guys know about this, but on the news they're talking about presidential candidates. Mm. Do you guys have any idea who's running for president right now? I mean, there's
Michelle
like
Bachman.
There's like Newt so many Gingrich. Random people.
The guy from Godfather Pizza.
Well, no, Obama.
Yeah, Herman Cain, who you're right, Jesse, is the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza, which I think, you know, some people ask, you know, presidential candidates, you know, why did you or did you not serve in the military? I feel like someone should ask this guy, you know, explain what being the CEO of Godfather's Pizza has done to prepare you to run this great nation. Anyway, so this Republican presidential candidate recently communicated that his stance when it came to appointing White House cabinet members or a federal judge was not going to include appointing any Muslims at all. And then he came out recently and clarified and said, no, actually, I just meant the Muslims that are trying to kill us. So instead of him having a stance against all people trying to kill us, he has narrowed his group of people that he's not going to appoint to his cabinet or to a position on the Supreme Court judge, as one of the Supreme Court judges, Muslims that are going to kill us, which I think is a completely different policy than previous presidents. I'm sure that most presidents haven't had that policy, and it's been a problem in the past.
You're the Minnesota Timberwolves.
That's
the
backup slice.
You know what? Actually, you're the Cleveland Cavs of the of slices because you're what's left
stolen.
After your primary slice was
my
stolen.
Primary was I had a backup ready to go. Yeah. I wasn't confident in it.
You're the backup plan.
All I'm saying is somebody coming out saying vote for me because I'm not going to appoint Muslims trying to kill us.
Yeah.
I think he's going to need a better plan.
I agree with that.
Yeah. You're the Mo Williams of this podcast.
I'm putting up 40 points over here, but nobody knows my name.
And now you play for the Clippers. And nobody knew you were traded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I thought he
was from Cleveland. Oh. Yeah. Oh. All right. That'll do it for slices.
No one cares about me.
Hold on. Just to finish the sports conversation, you hung out with Ryan Anderson from the Magic at Target.
No.
You and Cohen. No.
You guys
Maya.
Did shopping
no,
spree. Okay.
I saw a tweet.
Here's context. Okay. Last week, I'm eating lunch at Eden's Fresh down the road.
Right.
Nice little fresh wraps place.
Yeah. And who walks in?
Courtney Lee.
Look at that.
NBA shooting guard, former Magic shooting guard, Courtney Lee walks in.
Yeah.
Chris, he play for the Rockets now?
Yeah, I believe so. Chris Miata sitting next to me. I go, that's Courtney Lee over there. And we're the only three people in the restaurant at the time. And so he sits down at the table next to us, and I turn around and go, are you Courtney Lee? So we end up talking. Maya is a big Courtney Lee fan. She has his jersey when he was with the Magic.
Wow. Yeah,
and so that gave me an in to talk to him.
Sure, sure.
I told
my wife loves you.
It's actually what I said. And I told him we miss him on the Magic. He said he wants to come back. He's going to come back next year, and he's a free agent. You know, we just talked. And then a couple nights later, I see JJ Redick at dinner. He just
did
had,
you talk to him?
I didn't because he was with his wife.
You used to live in his building.
I did. We
you
were neighbors. So, but the only thing to talk to JJ about now is he just had groin surgery. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want to bring that up at dinner.
It's touchy.
Sore topic.
It's actually not touchy at all.
Yeah.
not at all.
So, but no then touchy, but then we were in Target. We're in the kids aisle, the beach aisle.
Huge fan. House of groin.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, what do I talk to him about? I got to ask about the groin.
Yeah. You don't ask if it's still swollen.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, his wife. Oh. We're all thinking it.
Yeah, and I didn't want to bring up like, oh, I was your neighbor 3 years ago. Don't you remember me? You know, so
I told him I played against him in high school at that signing that one time.
Yeah, you did. He was like, oh yeah, I don't remember you.
Yeah, yeah, I have no recollection of you, and now you're standing in a hour and a half line to get my autograph. Cool.
Cool. Obviously, our lives took different turns.
Look, JJ, we took different paths. Yes, I probably could have gone to Duke as well.
Yeah,
but I went to ORU and played intramural B plus basketball. So. But good for you. You seem like you're doing well. At least I don't have a surgically repaired groin. So whatever. It's cool, man.
And then the other night, Monday night, we're at Target with Cohen, Maya and I, and she looks over in the aisle next to her. She goes, "That's Ryan Anderson."
I almost didn't say something.
I know, and I didn't really see it
because you knew what was going to happen.
I knew. This is Ryan Anderson.
And I'm wearing
my magic hat.
Awesome.
So I'm like.
Like you are now?
Well, yeah, the exact same hat. Yeah. So I'm going, well, the finals were last night, and I'm wearing my magic hat, and a magic power forward is standing right there. I should go say hi to him. And she's like, don't you dare. She's like blocking me from walking towards him.
Hold on, time out. What is your fear? And in these moments, you almost didn't tell him. What is your fear before he finishes the story?
It's just embarrassing. I just want to leave them alone. They're just trying to shop in Target.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they don't want to. I'm sure
they don't want to talk about sports. And Cameron knows way too much. Probably Cameron knows more than they do.
I follow him on Twitter. Yeah, I know what he does.
Yeah. You knew he was there.
It would turn stalkery.
Okay.
So,
all right. So that's
your fear. So then Maya, you know, she keeps me from talking to him.
Yeah. I literally was blocking him.
But I noticed, I started
to walk away. I go, if you talk to him, I'm leaving. But I left him in the child.
But in his shopping cart, he had an ironing board. And so I'm like,
Why does he need an ironing board?
Why does he have an ironing board?
An ironing board is an item you buy once a lifetime.
Yeah. Yes.
My parents have an ironing board that I'm sure they had since before I was born.
Yes.
How does an ironing board possibly break?
That's a great question.
And why isn't his assistant getting his ironing board?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So I was really intrigued. And so we had to continue our shopping. Maya went over to the grocery section. And so she's like, I'll just jump in here real quick. And I had Cohen. So I'm like, well, I'll go get a refill up at the front of Target.
This is your chance.
And just kind of see if Ryan's up there.
Then
I'm at the Diet Coke dispenser. Just say hi.
Just chit chat.
So he's checking out. And I'm like, man, missed my chance. He's checking out. Well, then Maya shows up with all of her groceries and we're ready to check out.
Perfect.
Hey, look, there's an opening in the lane right next to Ryan Anderson. Let's go over there.
Boom.
Cameron literally.
And as we walk up.
Gave me a look of like, I'm doing this.
It's on. And as we walk
my
up.
Head and just went
I walk
as far
right
away as
next to him. We're literally standing right next to him. And I go, she made me promise not to say anything to you. Go Magic.
And what'd he say?
And he laughed and he goes, no, man, it's cool. And so
he
then
laughed
I'm like,
very graciously.
Yeah. And then I'm like, and then, hey, what did you think of the game last night? Hey, you know, hey, let's small talk. Let's small talk this up.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about the game.
You hate small talk.
He hates Miami. He loves seeing Dallas win. I go, you know, I actually think that Dallas is built a lot like the Magic. It kind of gives me hope that with a few tweaks and another year of experience, we might be right there. He goes, dude, we'll be fine. We're going to be fine. We're talking. And then Cohen had a little Nerf soccer ball, and he throws it right at Ryan Anderson.
Wow.
So Ryan Anderson starts throwing and playing catch with my 19-month-old.
Wow,
he was a
awesome.
Nice guy, and it was a nice experience.
Did you ask him anything about the ironing board?
Well, I was
no,
going to say
I
was, real quick.
I didn't want to bring it up.
During the conversation, I figured out the ironing board mystery.
Okay.
How tall is Ryan Anderson? He is 7'1", is he not?
No, he's 6'9". 6'10".
That's still very – okay, 6'10". That's still very tall. I imagine his slacks are huge.
Slacks.
So he had to get an extra long ironing board or put two together?
I think he's combining two ironing boards.
He's like, enough of this.
If you're 6'10", think about how frustrating it is because you iron the bottom of your dress pants or what have you, and then you move to the top, and your pants are so big, they're hanging off, getting wrinkled again.
I don't get why he doesn't send his laundry out. He's an NBA player.
With his assistant.
Yeah, the assistant can pick up his dry cleaning. He doesn't need to be ironing his own pants.
He's saving money. He just took a Dave Ramsey course.
It's true.
He's
preparing for the lockout.
Yeah.
No, what I'm saying is, if he does iron his own clothes, which evidently he does, he's going to use a modified board. And I don't think he realized that until he bought one ironing board. Then he realized, you know what, I'm going to need another one.
It's true. My pants hang off the edge, and I'm only like 6 foot.
How frustrating is that?
Yeah.
And you're probably not, he's probably, you know, almost a foot taller.
Oh, exactly.
He's got a 42-inch inseam. Yeah.
Think about how frustrating that would be with a standard size ironing board.
That is a big groin to have to surgically repair.
Yeah. No wonder JJ hurt his groin. He's using a standard ironing board. He's bought small pants to accommodate his standard ironing board.
It's just a little
tight.
When
he has the physique of an NBA player.
Yeah.
I bet a lot of injuries could be averted if people would just do what Ryan Anderson does and invent their own huge ironing board.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, Maya gets embarrassed because I don't, if we saw artists, bands, celebrities, I don't care. I mean, they're nice. They're just people.
Yeah.
Most of them are not nice people in our experience. So, whatever.
It's because of the tattoos.
Yeah. And the cocaine.
And the drugs. And the.
But for some reason, I turn into a 12-year-old whenever there's NBA players around.
Go Magic. I like that you said that.
No, that's actually what I said. I just walked up to him, I look at him, I go, Go Magic.
What if he
looked at me and I go, she made me promise not to say anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What if he looked at you and goes, that team's just a paycheck to me. And just grabbed his iron board and
he's like, go Nets.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, honestly, I'm a huge Bulls fan. Yeah, so. Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for Slices. Stay tuned. Up next, Owl City. You're listening to We Are Augustines. The song is Augustine. You think they could have picked a different word.
Yeah, does that really count?
No. Owl City's Adam Young is an unassuming 24-year-old Midwesterner who catapulted to blockbuster success with his debut album in July 2009, which was called Ocean Eyes. It had the song on it, Fireflies, which was a number one smash hit in 24 countries, including the U.S., and sold more than 4 million downloads. He has sold nearly 12 million tracks worldwide and has toured the world. His follow-up album, called All Things Bright and Beautiful, landed on June 14th. Here is Owl City.
So your last album, Ocean Eyes, was a platinum-selling success, and it earned you quite a fan following. So what can your fans expect from All Things Bright and Beautiful that might be new or different for you as Owl City?
You know, I think overall, this new record is, I think, when you play it down from top to bottom, I think aesthetically, I think tonally, I think it feels a little bit more conclusive or a little bit more resolved than Ocean Eyes did. I think mainly just because I've spent a lot of time kind of polishing my kind of craft, just because everything I do kind of just comes out of my basement, and I always forget how much work it takes to make a record when you're just one guy in a basement. But I spent a long time working with you know, gear and with kind of lyric variations and just kind of all around kind of. I think this new record sounds a little bit more older and wiser.
Now, the first single from this new album is Alligator Sky, and this features rapper Sean Christopher. Do you think collaborations like this will become more common in your music?
I think so. Yeah, it was a really fun. It was really fun. Experience all around, and I think that song in particular was just kind of a fun flavor, kind of a fun experiment to do. I think there's something about kind of coming up with a given song and then going out and finding somebody else who might, you know, add some wonderful texture or some beautiful flavor to what's already there. And I think that's really inspiring for me in and of itself, just to see how someone else, you know, will kind of take what's there and kind of, you know, mold it, kind of turn it into something else. And I love being there to kind of witness that, because so many times what's happening as a result of this, you know, given collaboration is so far out of the box in terms of my own inspiration for the song, it always ends up, you know, that much bigger and brighter than I would have otherwise imagined. So it's always great. It's always fun. Tell me again, was it love at first sight? When I walked by and you caught my eye, didn't you know love could shine this bright? Well, smile, because you're the deer in the headlights.
Kind of shifting gears a little bit. A lot of musicians try to keep their faith separate from their act, or they kind of keep it as a layered, subtle aspect of their art. But you're always very upfront about the fact that you're a Christian first and you're an artist second. So why do you think it's so important to make this kind of statement with your music, even when you're not singing about faith directly, but to let your listeners know about your beliefs?
For me, my prayer has always been that the Lord would just use my music to whatever end. I've always kind of just asked the Lord that this music be usable, you know, more than anything else, and really beyond that, my job is just to really kind of remain steadfast with my relationship with Him, and just kind of let these songs write themselves more or less, and ultimately never be ashamed of my faith and of my personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And really, you know, I feel like if I were to water down or try to hide that part of me, it would be like hiding, you know, that huge percent of who I am and who God has created me to be as an artist and whatnot. So yeah, it's never been my intention to really overthink kind of, well, am I going to, like, you know, write, you know, tons of Christian songs, or am I going to write, like, you know, try to, like, skirt away from it, you know, a lot. I've always just kind of prayed, like, God, just send me the songs that you want me to write, because once they're written and recorded, I'm going to send them all back to you and point all fingers back up to you. So it's, you know, it's almost none of my business in a funny way. Once these songs are done, I just want, you know, the Lord to use them however he chooses. I'd rather waltz than just walk through the forest. The trees keep the tempo and they sway in time. Quartet of crickets chiming for the chorus. If I were to pluck on your heartstrings, would you strum on mine?
And your music, in both melody and lyrics, it's just consistently optimistic and hopeful, and I think that's something that your fans really appreciate about you. But I'm sure a lot of them are wondering, does Owl City ever have a bad day?
you know, yeah, for sure, and it's kind of a funny way for me to escape from those bad days by writing and by imagining and by creating these very optimistic songs. And that's always been my way to kind of deal with you know, the average bad day, or you know, if I'm frustrated about something or if I'm feeling down about whatever. Yeah, music has always been my way to kind of you know, forget about that. So yeah, that's my way of with my way of dealing with a lot of things. Yeah.
That was Owl City. Check them out at owlcitymusic.com. Listening to Civil Twilight. The song is Letters from the Sky, and the video is playing right now over at Relevant TV. Check it out. Leslie Leland Fields is the author of a new book called The Spirit of Food, which offers the lives and voices of 34 renowned and adventurous writers who open their fields, their kitchens, their tables, and their recipe files to illustrate the many unexpected ways that food, both through feasting and through fasting, draws us closer to our neighbors, to Christian community, to God's creation, and to God himself. All bring a keen eye and palate to the larger questions of the role of food, its presence and its absence in the life of our bodies and spirits. Our very own Elise Gilligan spoke to Leslie recently, and here is part of that interview.
I was wondering, when did you first begin to notice and think about the importance of food as it appears in Scripture and in the Christian faith?
You know, I thought about food all my life because I grew up in the 60s and 70s when you know, it was sort of the first wave, you know, speaking sort of within our lifetimes, the first wave of kind of back to nature and organic, growing organic food and all. So my family was a part of that movement. So I was very connected to thinking about food holistically, but I was not a believer then. And so, when I became a Christian later, I started connecting it in my thinking, just kind of tangentially, but about 7 years ago, I started thinking about it really, really seriously. And that's when, you know, this book began in my mind, 5 to 7 years ago, and I started reading and looking at the scriptures and trying to think more intentionally about, you know, what are the connections between, you know, the food that we eat and the God that we serve.
When most people think of eating, especially in our culture, and are approaching trying to eat more mindfully or changing their diet, they usually do it for personal health reasons. That seems to be the primary motivation. But something you focus on in this book is that there's a lot of other public implications as well as far as how we eat. What are the broader responsibilities that you're hoping to remind people of through the spirit of food?
You know, a wonderful term that Barbara Kingsolver uses in her book Animal Vegetable Miracle, which I'm sure lots of people are familiar with, but she uses the term alimentary alienation, and she's talking about going to the supermarket and, you know, everything is saran wrapped and plastic wrapped and shrunk wrapped, you know everything is so removed from its original source of food. And so she's calling for, you know, to return an integrity and a wholeness to our understanding and our practice of eating. And that I'm calling for the same thing, except I want to expand it and I'm looking for a return to integrity in the fullest sense, which means to return us to a larger and fuller and more spiritual understanding of what it means to eat and what it means to grow food. And part of that is the whole sense of community and communion. You know, in the Old Testament, there's so much written about food. And, you know, one of the things we see is that God instituted all of these feasts. And some of the feasts last, you know, not a single meal like our feast, but, you know, they last for 7 days or 8 days. And the whole purpose of those feasts is eating in community and eating as commemoration, and as commemoration for the acts of God in history. And it's also gathering, you know, the body of the nation of Israel together to eat in the presence of one another, to remind themselves that they are the people of God.
What are some simple, practical ways you would recommend to our listeners where they can begin changing the way they approach and eat their food, even today, even after listening to this interview?
The first one is one I've already mentioned, about eating in community.
Right.
You know, here's another idea that Scripture actually commands us to do. We don't talk about this very much, but invite the poor to your table.
Hmm. Yeah.
So invite people who can't invite you back. That's a wonderful way to celebrate, I think, one of the most important purposes of food, and that is truly to feed the needy. Again, grow or harvest some of your own food as you can. And maybe that's going to mean, you know, if you live in the city, maybe you can drive out and pick your own strawberries. When you're able, we all have busy lives, but when you have a little bit of extra time, slow down and cook more deliberately and pay more attention. So we're thinking about ways that we can enrich and deepen, you know, our own food practices now. And here's another one. I would say consider beginning some kind of fasting practice. You know, Jesus assumed that we would all fast. He said, you know, when you fast. And in our culture of excess and indulgence, you know, most of us are afraid of hunger. But withdrawing from food for a time can have a lot of benefits.
That was Leslie Leland Fields. The new book is called Spirit of Food. Check it out. This is how it's meant to be. You're always a part of my heart. You're always a part of You're listening to Sally Seltman. The song is You're Always. The video is playing on Relevant TV. It's time for feedback. Last week, we asked you to tell us your best church special music story. You guys went over to the podcast episode page at relevantmagazine.com and posted your stories there. Here's a few of our favorites.
All right. So Sherry wrote in and said that she grew up in a small Baptist church, and her grandfather was a pastor, so they did special music all year round. She said a particularly memorable Sunday when he had mistakenly asked two girls in one Sunday to come up and do special songs. Usually, it was only one music special per Sunday, but they had incidentally picked the same song to perform. And so he offered, well, you guys can switch it up and, you know, one of you can reschedule. They decided they both wanted to perform. So back to back, they went up and performed the same song.
Aw, that church is lucky.
Philip said when he was a teenager, he was the poorly trained, or as Chad, you put it, incompetent sound guy. And he witnessed some seriously earnest church specials.
That's nice. Poorly trained. That's a much nicer way of saying it.
I don't know. When you deal with them week in, week out at your church, they just become incompetent.
Okay.
Well, when you read this guy's story, you feel a little bad because his dad was the pastor, so he was sort of forced into this position. And the sound booth was literally a wood panel box in the corner.
It always is. I could design one right now.
Yep.
So he had to work, and he said all they had was like this really old tape deck that was going to die at any moment. So one Sunday they have a special music guest come up, and his dad says, all right, you know, kind of gives him the sign for cue the music as the guy comes on stage. The tape deck dies. You know, he doesn't know what to do. So his dad says, look, we're having some technical difficulties. We'll just have to have you back next week. Then he offered this. Well, I guess unless you want to do it a cappella.
His dad
was kind of joking, but the singer did not take it as a joke. And he said he then witnessed the most awkward version of In the Master's Hand that has ever been performed.
Tim Morstel said, so when I was a kid, my family was one of those traveling singing groups, much like Ryan's
like
family.
Ryan, yeah.
Except my dad was a pastor of an independent Baptist church.
Wait, so the dad had to stay behind to pastor and the rest of the family went out and traveled?
No, they went together. It says my mom, dad, three siblings and myself. So, you know,
wow.
Special speaker.
4, 5, 6. And myself would perform with my mom playing the auto harp. This sounds like an SNL sketch. Yeah. At other independent Baptist churches in Southwest Pennsylvania. It's funny how they stay within that one denomination if they're going to travel. You'd think for a business model, you'd want to, anyway, one year I purchased one of those monkey puppets, you know, the one that wrapped around you to look like a monkey was strapped to you at a yard sale for 50 cents. And my mom got the great idea of me using it as a prop for one of our songs. This particular song was about being anti-evolution, claiming in quotes, "I'm no kin to the monkey. The monkey's no kin to me. I don't know much about his ancestors, but mine don't swing from a tree."
And he had the monkey puppet.
Little did I know I was being used as a puppet myself to push such an agenda. And then he finishes by saying,
pawn.
"I just hope that the monkeys don't find out during the forthcoming chimpocalypse."
Nice. Mm. All right. Well, there's a lot more stories if you want to go read them. Just head over to the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com, and it's the Francis Chan episode. Okay, so it's time for this week's
editorial question of the week. Hey.
Well, earlier in the podcast, Maya made an issue of me stalking Ryan Anderson in Target. So,
I like how you're passing the blame.
That's so LeBron of you.
Wow.
It's good.
It's nice. Proud of you. That's good.
Thank you.
You have the biggest smile on your face. You're very satisfied with yourself.
It's a great one.
Okay, so, you know, but my feeling is we've all stalked a little bit of celebrity in our life. You know, we've all had awkward encounters with people who are famous. You know, maybe we're a little excited to meet him. It's a little awkward small talk. I feel like I'm not the only one out there, and I want to hear your stories.
I saw Carl Weathers one time.
and you're just making this up.
I was with two buddies, and it was before like Arrested Development. Like it was, or before I was in college. And we're out in LA, like visiting a friend over spring break, and we're at some like, you know, health food store. Anyway, I'm walking around kind of following him. And he walks out, and I'm like, I got to say something. But I was trying to think the whole time, what can I say? And nothing came to my mind. And he had crossed the street, and I knew it was my last opportunity. And I just yelled, "Apollo!"
No.
Because he was Apollo Creed in the Rocky movies.
Oh, Jesse.
He turned around.
No. Jesse, you sound like you must be the guy that goes to golf tournaments and says, "Get in the hole!"
I love that guy.
I know. I'm just saying.
As soon as it comes off the face of the putter, get in the hole.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
I love it when you hear the one joker say it from the tee box.
I know, on a par 5.
Yeah, where you see Phil Mickelson just step up. As soon as he just cracks one, some guy yells, "Get in the hole."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I've a few. I don't know. We don't have enough time to go through all of mine. Let's see, one time late at night, 12:30, a friend of mine and I were walking downtown New York City, and we're walking by Bad Boy Entertainment. We're actually, ironically, getting cheesecake for our pregnant wives who were back up in the hotel room.
You weren't getting it ironically. You were getting it because they like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they like it. Ironically, because Diddy is famous for sending some people on the band show on MTV to go get cheesecake across the Brooklyn Bridge. Anyway, so there's a bunch of Escalades out front. It's late at night. We're like, let's see if he's coming out. There's a bunch of big security guards in suits that come out, open the doors that look like the president's about to walk out. And, you know, we start bantering about what are we going to say? Are we going to say anything? We're like a couple feet away from the door. And then all of a sudden, Diddy pops out. And I pound my chest with my fist. My buddy...
What?
Puts his fist in the air and gives him black power and yells, "Diddy!" And as I pump my chest with my fist, I then shoot him the peace sign and say, "What up, dog?"
No!
Things I've never, ever, ever done before. He stops.
It's like something comes over you at those moments.
He stops. It like he's getting into his Escalade. Oh, we're probably 12, 15 feet from him. He stops, looks at two white pastors on the streets of New York City.
Holding cheesecake.
Yeah, at 12:30. And he just laughs and says, "Hey, guys." And gets in the car. Like he takes a moment to take us in, kind of collects this vision of these two white guys giving him black power and saying, "What up, dog?"
Oh,
and then he jumps in his Escalade and just laughs and probably, you know.
Oh, I love it.
Pops Cristal. I don't know what he does. So, yeah, I have all sorts of random sightings and stories like that.
Well,
so.
I think I told like a, well, and I can tell the story next week, but I had a very odd conversation, an extended conversation with Russell Brand one time.
What? Oh, yes. Oh, at the comic book store.
Yeah, it was at Amoeba, the like that independent record and DVD store right. in LA.
Right.
And but he was dressed in the fishnet shirt, the leather pants, and everything, but shockingly engaged in the conversation.
Because you were talking about what?
Well, he was looking at like Simpsons DVDs, and I was with a buddy, and we're like, "Oh, you like the Simpsons, eh?" You know, just
it's a good starter.
Yeah, just breaking the ice.
That's good. That's good. Like with Ryan Anderson, you'd be like, "Oh, you like ironing?"
Yeah.
Where's that go? Clothes are wrinkled, huh?
Yeah. Fishnet.
Yeah. So the way you break the ice is you observe something that they have or are doing and then comment on that.
Exactly.
That's a good strategy. See me, I come preloaded with my small talk. I'm
go
ready.
Magic.
like go magic.
Go magic.
Yeah.
I had no logical entry point other than the DVD.
All right.
Okay. And like his response to that is in that Russell Brand voice, what he's like. He's like, "I really like seasons 1 through 7, but what's it got to 8? And like episodes where like Police Chief Wiggum would get into trouble. They're going so deep into the reservoir characters that I just didn't think it was funny as it was when it surrounded the core, you know?" And then he just really wanted to engage about the critical aspects of The Simpsons.
Wow.
Well, I wonder if that's how he and Katy Perry... Yeah. You know, hit it off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they invited me to the wedding.
But, okay, you know. good. Well,
by the sound of your accent, you mean the royal wedding?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's a very posh version of Russell Brand.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
from the east side.
He talked in his, you know, just like he is in the movies. And then he had this weird friend that was with him.
Wait, the guy in the fishnets that was talking that way about The Simpsons wasn't the weird one?
No. His other friend was like real grungy, and he had a real thick British accent. And he was walking over with this weird DVD he had found of some obscure soccer footage. And they were telling me about how this DVD had a video clip of a guy who died during a soccer game and how disturbing it was.
Wow.
Good. He's like, Russell Brand's like, "It's so weird. You can see the soul leave the body." It's trippy, man. It is trippy. He was just like the character in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. He was literally just, maybe he was like in character. I don't know. But he was very engaged and philosophical.
Wow.
There you go. So we want to hear your stories. I know we all have them. So
I'm trying to think for me.
I mean, you live with Cameron Strang. I mean, every day
there's a new story.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so, everybody but Maya has stories like this. We want to hear them. Head over to the podcast episode page at relevantmagazine.com and post yours there. If you want to call in on the Skype line, email us at podcast@relevantmagazine.com and tell us your Skype name. Chat will hook it up. On that note, we'll wrap things up. Many thanks to Owl City for talking to us. The new album is called All Things Bright and Beautiful. It released last Tuesday. You can check out more at owlcitymusic.com. And thanks to Leslie Leland Fields for talking to us. Her new book is The Spirit of Food. And you can find out more at leslie-leland-fields.com. Don't type out the word hyphen. Just hit the hyphen button.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, it's a very long URL.
She had another one, but Joe Biden took it.
Right, web.gov.
He shut it down. Yeah. Okay, that'll do it. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Maya Strang.
I'm Josh Luan Lovelace.
I'm Jesse Carey.
That's Chad Michael Snavely. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Relevant Podcast. For more, go to relevantmagazine.com.
Fiddle Enforcers is a .gov. There's a new sheriff in town now.